comfortably fed with grilled quail and with his thirst satisfied by the cool, sweet water of Bear Creek, Duff watched the play of color on Laramie Peak as the sun dipped behind the range. The sun was gone, but a painter's palette of color filled the western sky, from gold to pink to purple.
What do you think about your place?
I think this could make me forget about Scotland.
The two men talked until the fire burned out. Not one glowing ember remained. Then, under a canopy of stars that was more magnificent even than they had been at sea, Duff spread out his bedroll and drifted off to sleep.
Oh, Duff, I love it here. This would have been such a wonderful place for us to raise our children.
Sky, what are you doing here?
I am here because you are here. For the rest of your life, wherever you are, that is where I will be. Was I not with you on the ship? Did you not hear my voice in the wind? Did you not see my face in the sea?
I miss you, Sky. I miss you so much.
I know, my dear. But don't you know how it is here? We're never really apart. All you have to do is think of me, and I'll be there. Just on the other side of your memory. For you, it is reminiscence. But for me, it's real. I'll be reliving it.
Sky. Sky? Sky?
Duff sat up in his bedroll, reaching out into the darkness for his Sky. But she wasn't there. For just a moment, he felt an overwhelming sense of emptiness. Then he knew he'd only been dreaming. Or was it a dream? It seemed so true, so physical, that it was hard to think of it as surreal. What had she told him?
She'll always be just on the other side of memory.
Falcon had come with Duff not only to be with him as he filed for his claim, but also to help him build the cabin he would need in order to improve his holding. So they spent the next morning scouting the area, first determining the perimeters of his land, then deciding where best to build the cabin. Duff wanted it right at the confluence of the two creeks, but Falcon cautioned him that when the snow in the mountains melted, there would be a runoff and the creeks would be in a freshet stage. They found a place on some elevated ground, at least 30 feet higher than the creek, but close enough to it that it would be a ready source of water. Duff decided to lay out the dimensions of the cabin when they returned from town. They didn't leave for town until early afternoon, but it didn't take them long to finish their ride, for Chugwater was only 10 miles from Duff's land. Duff's initial view of the town was not all that reassuring. At first, it seemed little more than part of the topography of the land they were riding through. Hillocks on the horizon, mostly the same color as the earth from which the clumps emerged. As they drew closer, though, the hillocks and clumps began to take shape, and he saw that they were not a part of the desert, but were a town. The buildings, consisting mostly of adobe brick and rip-sawed, unpainted, and weathered boards, sat festering in the sun. A sign as they entered the town reflected either the hyperbole of an over-enthusiastic town booster or his sarcasm.
Welcome to Chugwater WT, population 205, the jewel of Chugwater Valley.
The town was not served by a railroad, but as they rode in, Duff saw a stagecoach sitting at the depot, the six-horse team standing quietly in their harness. The driver, with a pipe stuck in his teeth, was sitting in his seat, his feet propped up on the splashboard in front of him, his arms folded across his chest. He appeared to be grabbing a few moments of rest, totally indifferent to the depot personnel who were loading passengers' baggage on top of the coach and into the boot. The passengers were waiting alongside the coach. 3 men, 2 women, and a child. One of the passengers who had just gotten off the stage was a woman who Duff guessed was in her 20s. She was quite pretty, with blonde hair and blue eyes. She brushed a fall of hair from her forehead, then flashed a smile toward Duff as he rode by. He touched his hand just above his right eye and dipped his head toward her.
Pretty, ain't she?
Duff was surprised by the comment. He was riding behind Falcon, and he had no idea that Falcon had even noticed the brief and silent exchange.
Aye, she is.
What do you say we get the dust out of her mouths?
Falcon pointed toward one of the more substantial-looking of the buildings. It was a saloon bearing the unlikely name of Fiddler's Green.
Aye, 'tis a good idea, I would say.
Dismounting in front of the saloon, Duff and Falcon spent the first few seconds slapping themselves to get rid of the dust and raising a cloud around them.
I'll bet you've never seen this much dust before.
Not since Egypt.
Oh, yeah. Now that you mention it, I suppose there is a little dust in Egypt.
They pushed through the swinging batwing doors, and because the inside of the saloon was illuminated only by the light that streamed in through some dirty windows, they had to stand there for just a second to allow their eyes to adjust. Duff noticed that Falcon moved away from the door and placed his back against the wall, so he did the same thing. Compared to many of the saloons Duff had seen since coming west, Fiddler's Green was fairly nice looking, surprisingly so because the town seemed so remote. There was a mirror behind the bar, bracketed by shelves that were filled with scores of bottles of various kinds of liquor and spirits. A sign on the wall read, "Gentlemen, kindly use the spittoons." The sign was either obeyed or the saloon proprietor was pretty particular about cleaning, for the floors were remarkably free of any expectorations. There was a piano at the back of the room, but nobody was playing. As Duff and Falcon approached the bar, Duff saw a brass foot rail, and he made use of it. He welcomed it because lifting his leg somewhat did seem to ease a bit of the ache he was feeling in his back as a result of the long ride of the last 2 days.
What'll it be, gents?
2 beers.
And I'll have the same.
Oh, you boys seem to have worked up a thirst.
Long ride.
Where'd you boys come from? Not that it's any of my business.
I take your question as friendly discourse and have no problem with answering, especially since we will be neighbors, and I expect to visit your establishment from time to time. We rode up from Cheyenne.
That's a long ride.
Holding the mugs by their handles, 2 in each hand, the bartender set them down in front of Duff and Falcon. Both men pulled out 2 nickels apiece, but the bartender took only 1 nickel from each of them.
First beer to a first-time visitor is free.
Well, that's very neighborly of you.
Both Falcon and Duff turned up their mugs and drained them without pause.
That one was for thirst. This one is for taste.
Do you serve food here, or do we need to find a restaurant?
Bacon, beans, biscuits. The biscuits ought to be pretty good. I was just back in the kitchen, and they're about ready to come out.
What'd you think, Duff?
I'm not likely to get haggis, taties, or neeps, so bacon, beans, and biscuits will do just fine.
You're from Scotland. I thought I recognized your accent.
You have a good ear for accents.
Not really, but my wife's parents are from Scotland, so I'm familiar with the brogue, and with haggis, taties, and neeps. Though I have to tell you, I can't stand this stuff. If we're going to be neighbors, as you say, we may as well get acquainted. The name is Johnson. Biff Johnson.
Duff McAllister.
Duff? Duff and Biff? We shouldn't have any trouble remembering our names.
This is my kinsman, Falcon.
Yes, Falcon. I thought I recognized you.
Do we know each other, Biff?
It's been a while, but you don't remember me, do you?
I'm sorry, friend. I can't say that I do remember you.
I'll let you think about it for a while. I believe it will come to you.
Biff, I don't believe I've ever heard of that name.
Not likely that you would have. My real name is Benjamin Franklin Johnson. But that was too long a handle, so folks started calling me BF, and somehow that became Biff. What about Eats? Do you want what we have?
We'll take it.
The two men took their beer to a nearby table. It didn't take long for one of the bar girls to approach him.
Hello, my name is Lucy.
Lucy was tall, raw-boned, and full-breasted. She had wide-set blue-gray eyes, high cheekbones, and a mouth that was almost too full.
Have I seen you two in here before?
Well, not likely. We just got into town.
Duff stood up and pulled a chair out for her by way of invitation.
Aren't you the gentleman, though? Most of the time, someone just kicks the chair out with their foot and expects me to be all grateful that they've invited me to sit down.
Oh, I could never do such a thing.
Oh, my, what a lovely accent. If you hadn't invited me to sit down, I may have anyway. I've been on my feet all day.
No big thing, you're a whore, so you'll be on your back all night.
Pig iron, you got no call to be saying something like that.
Duff saw the hurt reflected in Lucy's eyes, and without saying another word, he stepped over to the table of the man who had made the rude comment.
'Tis thinking I am that you'll be wanting to apologize to the lady for that intemperate remark.
You want me to apologize to a whore? In a pig's eye, I will.
Then I'll be asking you, with all due respect, to move to another table.
Pig Iron stood up and smiled at Duff. It was not a smile of humor.
I heard you tell the bartender that you was going to be moving here, so you may as well learn now to mind your manners around old Pig Iron.
Suddenly, and unexpectedly, Pig Iron took a swing at Duff, but Duff ducked under it easily. Then, with the extended fingers of his left hand, he jabbed hard at a point in the upper abdomen just below where the ribs separated.
Well, don't worry, friend. You will regain your breath. Sure, and I could follow that up with a blow that would render you unconscious, but I think you're uncomfortable enough as it is, and I've no wish to make enemies so quickly in my chosen place of abode. So let us just agree that this episode is over. Do I have your agreement on that?
Because it was impossible for Pig Iron to actually talk, he nodded.
Good. Next time we meet, may I suggest a more convivial exchange?
Pig Iron nodded again, and Duff returned to the table.
Damn, you'll have to show me that trick sometime.
Nothing to it.
Duff put his fingers on Falcon's solar plexus and made a slight jab. The jab was very gentle, but it was also enough to show Falcon what a hard jab would do.
I'll have to remember that.
Pig Iron left the saloon as Biff Johnson was bringing a drink for Lucy, even though the girl hadn't ordered it.
He must know your brand.
That's not hard. One glass of tea is pretty much like any other glass of tea.
Lucy picked it up and held it toward Falcon and Duff in a toast.
Well, 'tis an honest lassie be about me paying whiskey prices for your tea.
Honey, if everything we drank really was whiskey, we'd all be drunk before mid-afternoon.
Get out!
Duff dived from his chair onto Lucy, knocking her down and falling on top of her. Pig Iron fired, but he missed Duff and fatally hit another prostitute. Falcon quickly pulled his gun.
Get on!
Annie! Oh my God, Annie!
Duff rolled off Lucy and looked over at the table near the back of the room. One of the bar girls was lying on her back, her chest red with blood. Everyone in the room ran to her, but they saw as soon as they arrived that there was nothing they could do.
Oh!
I'm sorry, lass. I'm truly sorry.
The next day, Annie was buried in the small town cemetery. When they returned to Fiddler's Green, it was draped in black bunting. A sign on the front read, "In Memoriam, Matilda Ann Gilbert, our Annie." Biff brought the meal to the table. Roast beef, mashed potatoes, green beans, and freshly baked bread. When Duff and Falcon attempted to pay for it, Biff held out his hand and shook his head.
No, this is for Annie. But if you don't mind, I'll be taking my dinner with you as well.
We don't mind at all. 'Tis welcome company you'll be.
I left my plate on the bar. I didn't want to presume.
Biff stepped back to the bar, then returned with his own plate.
Tell me, Biff, why do you call this place Fiddler's Green? Have you fiddlers who play here from time to time?
Colonel McAllister, suppose you tell him about Fiddler's Green. I know you know what it means.
Colonel McAllister.
Falcon looked across the table at Biff for a moment, and then he smiled.
You're Sergeant Johnson. You were with Custer at Fort Lincoln.
I knew you would remember it. I was in D-Troop with Benteen.
No wonder you call this place Fiddler's Green.
I still don't know what it means.
It's something the cavalrymen believe. Anyone who's ever heard the bugle call Boots and Saddles will, when they die, go to a cool, shady place by a stream of sweet water. There, they will see all the other cavalrymen who have gone before them, and they will greet those who have come after them as they await the final judgment. That place is called Fiddler's Green.
Do they really believe that?
Why not? If heaven is whatever you want it to be, who's to say that cavalrymen wouldn't want it to be with their own kind?
I like the idea.
Many is the time we went into battle with the promise to a friend to be waiting at Fiddler's Green. I've many friends there now, waiting for me. And I've no doubt but that Custer and his brother Tom and Captains Calhoun and Keogh are there now.
And Isaiah Dorman.
Custer's Black Scout. That's right. He was a friend of yours, wasn't he?
He was indeed.
'Tis a good thing to hold on to. I've many friends of my own who are killed in battle. Perhaps they found their way there as well.
If they were good men, warriors who died in battle, you need have no doubt about it. My lads will invite them over to sit and visit.
I hope they behave like gentlemen when they see Annie.
Oh, you need not trouble yourself, Lucy. All in Fiddler's Green are gentlemen.
Tell me what you knew about the lass we buried this morning.
I'm sorry to say that I know very little about her. She came into town on the stagecoach one day, came straight here from the stage depot and asked me for a job. She was attractive and had a good sense of humor. The men liked her. I was glad to see that the whole town turned out for a funeral, but I wasn't all that surprised. We're very isolated out here, and to a degree, each one of us is dependent upon the other.
She was from Memphis. She had married into one of the wealthiest families there, but she was raped one night while her husband was out drinking. The rapist was one of her husband's friends, but her husband blamed her and said he couldn't live with her anymore because she was soiled. So she decided that if she was going to have the name, she would have the game. She came here with the specific intention of becoming a soiled dove.
I thought it might be something like that. All of you girls had lives before you came here. I've never tried to find out because I've always thought that you deserve some privacy.
We know that, Mr. Johnson. We appreciate you respecting us in that way.
After they finished eating, Duff and Falcon went down to the R.W. Guthrie Lumber and Building Supplies Company. There, they were met by the owner, a short, stout man with a round face and a somewhat oversized nose. Guthrie took Duff and Falcon out into his lumber yard to show him what he had.
Yes, sir. I've got everything you might need to build a house, from the studding to the outside planking to the inside walls and floor. I've got the roof trusses, the roof shingles, doors and windows. I've got all the nails you'll need.
That's good to know.
I even have some building plans if you'd like to see them.
I've no wish for something grand. I want to build a one-room cabin.
How large?
It need not be too large.
We have plans for one that's 15 by 20 feet. That'll give you 300 square feet of living space. How does that sound to you?
It sounds just right.
Good. Then we'll start gathering up what you need. Where will you be building this cabin?
On my ranch. Or what's going to be my ranch. It's 10 miles south of town at the junction between the Bear and the Little Bear Creeks.
Did you say at the junction of the Bear and Little Bear?
You're really going to try and settle there, are you?
Try. What do you mean by try?
nothing at all. Yeah, that's really quite a nice piece of land out there. It's just that...
Just that what?
Well, sir, that's where the Little Horse Mine was.
Little Horse Mine?
Yeah, it's an old abandoned gold mine that was dug by the Spanish more than 100 years ago. There's been stories told about it. Some Cheyenne Indians brought in some gold nuggets to a trading post that they said had been in the tribe for a long time. Well, it was supposed to have been played out, but about 10, maybe 15 years ago, it said that a man named Elmer Gleason found gold in the mine. He showed up in Denver with a bag full of gold nuggets trying to sell the mine, but he didn't have no proof that he had got the gold at the Little Horse Mine. Well, there's all kinds of stories as to where he might have got the gold. Some say he picked it up in the Black Hills. Some say he got it in California during the gold rush of 49. At any rate, nobody bought the mine, and Gleason never come back. There don't nobody know if he's dead or alive, because there ain't nobody heard anything from or about him since that time. But most folks think maybe he come back to the mine and died. They never found him, but they found a mule, its bones picked clean by buzzards and such. They figure he was killed, and the critters dragged his bones off.
Killed? By who?
Don't nobody know that, and that's part of the mystery. Because you see, there was a couple of fellas, Lonnie Post and Sam Hodges, who went out there to see if there was any gold to be found, and the next thing you know, both of them turned up dead. By that time, folks was getting just plumb skittish about going out there, gold mine or no gold mine. But Arnold Brown said the whole thing was foolish, and if there was some gold out there, he intended to go find it.
Don't tell me. Mr. Brown turned up dead as well.
Don't nobody know. Didn't find a skeleton or nothing like that, but ain't nobody ever heard from him since then. And there ain't nobody gone out there since. They say the place is haunted. Of course, I ain't saying that I believe in haunts, you understand, but that's what they say. Some say it wasn't the Spanish, that it was Injuns that first found the gold, but they was all killed off by white men who wanted the gold for themselves. But what happened is, after the Injuns was all killed, they become ghosts. And now, they haunt the mine, and they kill any white man who comes around trying to find the gold. Now, mine, I don't believe none of that. I'm just telling you what folks say about it.
Where is this mine, anyway? We didn't see anything that looked like a mine.
Didn't you say you was betwixt the Bear and the Little Bear Creeks?
Yeah.
Well, sir, that mine is just south of the Bear in a butte that you see there. The butte is called Little Horse Butte. It ain't all that high, 100 feet or so, and it's flat as a table on top.
Aye, I remember seeing that.
The mine is dug into the west end of that butte. You can't see it from a distance, I'm told, but if you get right up close, you can see it real clear.
That's quite an interesting tale.
But it ain't going to stop you from going out there, is it?
No, sir.
I didn't think it would scare you away. I heard how you handled Pig Iron, and then how he come back in blazing away with his shotgun, and I heard how you killed him, Mr. McAllister.
I'm afraid I had no choice.
Now, don't get me wrong, Mr. McAllister. I sure ain't putting no blame on you. They ain't likely to be nobody that'll blame you for it. Truth to tell, and near about everyone will say this, Chugwater Valley is a heap better off without him. But, I know you didn't come in here for all this palavering. You decided what you want to do, Mr. McAllister.
How much will it cost me to buy enough material to build a cabin?
You're wanting the one that's 15 by 20.
Aye.
Would you be wanting a front porch to it and roof over it so as you can sit in the afternoon out of the hot sun?
That might be nice.
I can sell you everything you're going to need. Supplies and tools, and I'll ship it out there for you, too. It's going to take two wagons at least for a grand total of $103.50.
It will take two wagons?
Yes, sir, I think so. We might be able to get it all on one wagon, but it would put quite a strain on the wagon and the team.
No, two wagons are fine, but I shall have some additional purchases to make, and 'tis wondering I am if there might be a little room on one of the wagons.
If we use two wagons, there'll be plenty of room. You'll be going over to the mercantile, I take it, so just tell Fred, he's the owner, Fred Matthews, just tell him to get in touch with me. I'll see to it that your stuff gets on one of the wagons.
Thank you. When I make my additional purchases, I shall so inform the merchant.
Reaching into his pocket, Duff pulled out a wad of money and then began counting it out.
How soon can you get the material out to my site?
I can have it all out there by noon tomorrow.
Good. Please do so.
Yes, sir. It's been a pleasure doing business with you.
I have 50 cents in change due.
Oh, yes, sir. Don't you worry. I wasn't going to forget that.
From the Guthrie Lumber and Building Supply, they went to the Chugwater Mercantile, a large store that had a sign out front boasting that they sold goods for all mankind. Here, Duff bought the things he would need to furnish the house. He bought a pot-bellied wood-burning iron stove that would serve both for warmth and as a cook stove. He bought an iron skillet, two pots, a coffee pot, a water bucket, and a dipper, and two plates, two cups, and two sets of flatware. He also bought a wash basin, a small table, two chairs to go with the table, and a rocking chair and footstool. Finally, he bought a Winchester 44-40 lever-action repeating rifle, six boxes of 44-40 cartridges, a double-barreled Greener shotgun, and six boxes of 12-gauge shotgun shells.
Would you be having any 47-caliber ammunition?
Fred Matthews stroked his chin for a moment.
Mister, I not only don't have any of that, I don't think I've ever heard of a 47-caliber. Don't know as they make such a thing.
Duff pulled a round from one of the bullet loops on his belt and showed it to Matthews.
This is a 47 caliber bullet.
What sort of a gun would use such a bullet?
Duff pulled his pistol and showed it to him.
This is an Enfield Mark I. I'm told that it's the weapon of choice for the Royal Canadian Mounted Police.
Is it now? Royal Canadian Mounted Police? Well, in that case, I expect I'll be able to find some. I don't have it now, but I'll put some on order for you.
You have my gratitude, sir.
How do you plan to get everything out to your place?
Tomorrow, Mr. Guthrie will be taking all the building supplies I need out to my place. He's agreed to let me ship additional purchases on one of his wagons.
Fine. I'll see R.W. and get it all set up with him.
I'll be taking the rifle and the shotgun with me.
Of course.
While Duff was busy making his purchases at the Mercantile, Falcon had been over at the general store, buying food that they would need over the next several days. He came out of the store with two large cloth bags that he draped over his horse, just forward of Lightning's saddle. Duff joined him.
Did you get everything taken care of?
Everything will be delivered tomorrow.
Well, then all we have to do is ride out there and wait for it.
Aye, that's about the size of it.
Oh, Duff, are you gonna do it?
Am I gonna do what?
I think you know what I'm talking about. I just want to know if you're gonna do it.
You're talking about the mine, aren't you? The gold mine.
Yeah, I'm talking about the gold mine. Are you gonna check it out?
I thought I might.
Well, I must say, you would have disappointed me if you had said otherwise.
Do you think there's anything there?
I don't know what you're talking about. By anything there, are you talking about ghosts? Or are you talking about gold?
I'm talking about the gold.
What about the ghosts?
Let them get their own gold.
The Bucket of Blood Saloon was the least attractive of all of Cheyenne's saloons. The bar consisted of nothing but boards stretched across two upright and empty beer barrels. It served only two types of drinks, beer and local whiskey that got its color and taste from rusty nails. The women who worked there were on the bottom rung of their profession, tired and scarred by rough treatment and dissipation. The Bucket of Blood drew habitual drunks and the denizens of the town, and it was here that Malcolm and the men who were with him had gathered. They came because it was cheap, and also because nine men traveling together would gather less attention here than they would in one of the more socially acceptable saloons. Malcolm was ill at ease here. He found the bad whiskey, unsightly interior, and scarred women to be off-putting.
How much money do you have?
The men were gathered around two tables in the back of the Bucket of Blood saloon.
Why do you ask, Liam? You're spending a lot of money for train tickets and the like. The reason I ask is I know how we can pick up some more money.
How?
By going to where the money is.
Pettigrew, you ain't making no sense at all. What do you mean by going to where the money is?
Shh! Think about it, Hill. Where do folks keep their money?
A bank? You're talking about holding up a bank, ain't you?
Finally figured it out, did you? Yeah, I'm talking about holding up a bank. As long as we've got this many people together, it would be an easy thing to rob a bank.
We haven't gathered together to rob a bank.
I know what we've come together for. I'm just saying it'd be a shame not to take advantage of all of us being together like this.
Pettigrew's right. With this many men, there couldn't no bank in the country stop us from just walking in and cleaning it out.
I am an officer of the law. How can you expect me to go along with something like this?
You ain't an officer of the law in this country. And unless I misunderstood you, you planning on killing this here Duff McAllister fella when you find him. That'll be against the law.
Here's the thing, Malcolm. We're gonna hold up this bank, and you can be with us and share in the money. Or you can stay out of it and don't get anything at all.
I've never held up a bank before. I wouldn't have any idea how one would go about doing such a thing.
Oh, hell, there ain't nothing to it. All we gotta do is keep a few men posted outside while the rest of us go inside and tell the teller to empty the safe.
How much money is one likely to get in such a thing?
Oh, in a town like this? If we didn't come away with $10,000, I'd be some surprised.
$10,000?
At least.
If we hold up the bank, we will have to make a rapid exit from town, will we not?
Only if you don't want to get strung up.
All right, I'll go along with it on one condition. We came here to find McAllister. If we are required to make a hasty exit, we're not likely to find out anything about him. I think we should make sufficient inquiries to satisfy our quest before we engage in anything like robbing a bank.
Uh-huh. Well, that ain't gonna be no problem. We're gonna have to check out the bank first anyway. We're going into a bank to hold it up before you know what you're getting yourself into. Now, that ain't a smart move anyhow.
$10,000. All right, gentlemen. You may consider me a participant in this endeavor.
It was early afternoon by the time the two wagons arrived at the place Duff had chosen to build his cabin. As there were two men on each wagon, it didn't take long for Duff, Falcon, and the four freight men to unload all the material. Less than an hour after they arrived, all the lumber, tools, and furnishings were lying on the ground near the staked-out area for the cabin, and the empty wagons were heading back to Chugwater. Both Falcon and Duff had done building before, so they worked well together getting the floor down. After the floor was done, they placed the support posts at four corners, then additional posts between the corners, until finally they had the basic part of the house framed up. By that time, it was dark, so they spent one more night under the stars, though they promised each other that by the next night, they'd be inside. The next morning, they had the roof trusses up by mid-morning, and two of the walls closed in by noon.
Here's an idea. The floor is down. Let's move all this stuff in now and finish building around it.
Good idea. Where do you want the stove? We'll need to know so we know where to vent the chimney through.
Right here, right in the middle. I believe this to be the most efficient location for providing heat this winter.
You're probably right.
Once everything was inside, they resumed work on building the cabin. As they had promised each other, they spent the night inside, throwing their bedrolls out on the floor. They were finished with everything but the porch. The next morning, they added the porch.
Well now, Duff, you have a ranch.
The two men sat on the front porch, eating a meal of bacon and fry bread and drinking coffee.
What are you gonna name it?
I've been giving that some thought. I think I'll call it Sky Meadow.
An outstanding name, yep. Yeah, I think it fits the place.
However, it's my understanding that in order to be a rancher, one must have livestock.
Oh, what do you want a bunch of cows for anyway? They're ignorant brutes and they just tie you down.
Perhaps you have a point. But one can scarcely be a rancher without livestock. How am I to acquire the cattle I shall need?
Oh, don't you worry about it. I can lend you enough money to get started. and you can pay me back when you can.
You've already been too generous with your time, Falcon. I have no intention of making a demand on your finances as well.
Cousin, I don't want you to take this wrong, because it isn't that you're not trustworthy. But I don't think you're going to find a bank that will lend you the money. If you're indeed going to start ranching, you will, as you have pointed out, need cattle. And in order to buy cattle, you will need money. Where else are you going to get it, if not from me?
A good question. However, there may be a solution if...
If there's gold in the mine. You do know that it's highly unlikely that there's really anything there. It's probably all a story, and we'll just be wasting our time.
Aye, you're right. And when you're right, you're right. Shall we go have a look?
Yeah, but we better take a lantern. You don't have to go very far down into one of those things before it gets so dark you can't even see the hand in front of your face.
A lantern and a pickaxe.
Aye, sure 'twould be a shame to go into a mine without nay a pickaxe.
You'd better stick to American English. And 'tis a shame, too. Our mutual grandfather would be rolling in his grave now to hear how his descendants have brutalized the mother tongue.
It took half an hour to find the mine entrance because it was shielded by an outgrowth of sagebrush. But when they did find the opening, they were gratified to see that it was tall enough and wide enough to allow both of them to enter while fully erect. Both men were carrying full canteens. In addition, Duff was carrying a lantern and a pick. They got no more than 100 feet into the mine before it became dark enough that it was necessary to light the lantern. The lantern threw out a wide bubble of golden light that reflected back from the walls and showed a long black tunnel before them. The two men walked for several minutes.
Wait! Stop!
What is it?
Duff walked over to the wall and held up the lantern. Something in the wall glittered back in the light.
I'm gonna pick here for a while and see what turns up.
Setting the lantern down, Duff began using the pickaxe on the wall. Each time he struck, large chunks of shale would tumble down from the wall. As he continued to strike at it, the tailings piled up on the floor of the mine, and Falcon got on his knees to sift through it, looking for any sign of color.
Have you found anything?
No, not yet. But wait, there might be something here.
Duff turned to look at Falcon, and when he did, he saw a frightening apparition behind him. A two-legged creature covered with hair and with wild eyes was holding a large rock in both hands, about to bring it crashing down on Falcon's head.
Look out!
Falcon leaped to one side as the creature brought the rock down. Thanks to Duff's warning, the rock missed Falcon, but the creature lifted it over his head again, and with gleaming red eyes came toward Duff. Duff used the head of the pickaxe to knock the rock out of the creature's hand. The creature turned and ran, disappearing into the dark tunnel of the mine as if it was able to see in the dark.
Are you all right?
Yeah.
What on earth was that?
Ooh, I don't know. Maybe Mr. Guthrie's haunt?
It was no ghost, for it was something physical.
A bear, maybe?
I don't know about American bears, but I've never seen a bear in Europe that could use his hands like this one did.
Whatever it was, I think we know what happened to the men who were killed here.
Aye, that's for certain.
Are you gonna continue to look for gold?
Sure, and you aren't thinking I'm gonna be frightened off by a ghost, are ya? Especially since it isn't a ghost.
If we're going to continue to work in here, I have an idea.
What?
We have some string and engineering stakes left over from building the house. We can bring them here.
Aye, and stretch a tripwire across the passage to give us warning when the beast returns. 'Tis good thinking, cousin. We've already shown that whatever or whoever it is, it can be fought off. We need only to be alerted to its presence.
When Malcolm stepped into the land clerk's office, he saw a wall that was covered with a huge map of Laramie County, Wyoming. Beneath the map were several cabinets filled with drawers. The land clerk, a very thin man with white hair and glasses, was sitting at a table behind the counter that separated his area from the front.
Yes, sir. What can I do you for?
My name is Reb Malcolm. I was told by my kinsman that he would be filing on some land here in Wyoming, and it is my hope that you would have a record of such.
Well, if he filed here, I'll have a record of it. I keep a very tidy office, and I can tell you the name of everyone who's filed for land in Laramie County for the last 6 years. What would be the name?
McAllister. Duff McAllister.
Ah, yes. I should have known by your accent. You sound just like him. And you're in luck. He did indeed file here a short time ago.
The clerk walked to the long row of cabinets, opened one of the long drawers, and pulled it out.
McAllister. Let's see. Kelly, Kilmer, Logan, Lynch, Mabry. Ah, here it is. McAllister.
The clerk pulled the card out and looked at it.
Yes, he applied for section 280417.
And where would that be?
I'm sorry, I just gave you the map coordinates, and for sure it would mean little to you if you didn't have a map. If you would step back here, I'll show you where it is.
Thank you.
Now, it's about 50 miles north of here, at this point, where Bear and Little Bear Creek join. You see?
Aye. And would you be for having a smaller map available that I could use?
Are you filing for land? Because we provide maps free, gratis, for anyone who's applying for land.
Nah. I'll not be applying for land.
In that case, I'll have to charge you 15 cents for the map.
I'll take it.
Later that day, in order to more closely examine the bank, Rab Malcolm stepped up to the teller's window with $557 in his hand, which was all the money he had remaining from the amount that had been sent to him by Summerald.
Yes, sir?
My good man, I should like to make a deposit in your bank.
Yes, sir. We'd be glad to open an account for you.
The teller pulled a book of forms over to him, picked up a pen, and started to write.
What's your name, sir?
The name is Malcolm. Rab Malcolm.
R-A-B?
Eh?
And how much money do you wish to deposit?
Here, let's not be in such a hurry.
The teller looked up from the book of deposit slips with a questioning expression.
I beg your pardon, sir? Is there something wrong?
How safe is this bank? What I'm asking is, suppose I put my money in here and someone robs the bank.
Oh, sir, I assure you, you will never have to worry about anything like that happening.
Oh, why not?
Mr. Snellgrove?
A rather rotund man with a bald head, round face, pudgy nose, and eyes enlarged by the glasses he was wearing, looked up at the call. Like the bank teller, he was wearing a three-piece suit.
Yes, Mr. Lysenby.
This gentleman wants to make a deposit with us.
Very good. I'm sure you'll be pleased with our bank, sir. All of our customers are.
I'd like you to show me around. I want to see just how safe my money would be in here.
Oh, it will be quite safe, I assure you.
Aye, but I'm from Scotland, and if you know anything about we Scots, it's that we are very frugal people with our money. Could you show me some of the features that you say will keep my money safe?
I would be glad to. Suppose you step back here.
Snellgrove reached down and released a latch that opened the Dutch door to allow Malcolm access to the back part of the bank.
Right this way.
Snellgrove led Malcolm to the back, where sat a very large, heavy-looking steel safe.
It's called an American standard. The door is 4-inch thick steel, and it's locked by 4 steel bars, each 2 inches in diameter. In addition, the tumblers are absolutely silent, so that no one can pick the lock.
Could one breach the door with dynamite?
If someone attempted to blast the vault open with dynamite, all they would do is destroy the building. The safe would remain impervious.
That must be a very strong safe.
It has to be strong. As of this morning, we have on deposit. Lysenby, exactly how much money do we have?
$18,927.46.
That's a lot of money.
Yes, it is. And now, how much money will you be depositing with us?
I don't know. I still need to think this over for a while.
Very well, Mr. I don't think I heard your name.
Malcolm. His name is Rab Malcolm.
Mr. Malcolm, once you consider the security of our bank, I'm sure you will wish to become a customer.
Thank you for the information. I will make my decision shortly as to whether or not I'll entrust my funds to your establishment.
Duff and Falcon had been working the mine for 3 days, and though they had not made a significant find, they had found enough color in the tailings to make their effort worthwhile. Last night, examining the nuggets they had recovered, Falcon estimated that they had at least $100 worth of gold. The creature that had appeared on their first day in the mine did not reappear until late on their third day.
Did you hear?
Aye.
Get ready.
Duff picked up the lantern and moved it about 50 feet back toward the entrance. Doing so left him in the dark. That was part of their plan. Falcon had the looped rope ready. And when the creature passed him, Falcon stepped out behind and threw the rope out in a wide loop. The loop fell down over the creature, and Falcon jerked the rope back, tightening the loop, which had the effect of securing the creature's arms by its side. Duff leaped out behind him to knock him down. The creature struggled, but Duff and Falcon were too strong. Within a moment, Falcon had looped the rope around him enough times to have both his arms and legs restricted.
Get the lantern, Duff. Let's see what we have here.
Duff hurried back to get the lantern. Then he returned and held it up as Falcon turned the creature over.
I'll be. It's a man.
The man's hair hung down to his waist, and he had a full beard. He was wearing clothes made out of wolf skin, and his fingernails were long and curled.
Yeah, well, of course I'm a man. What'd you think I'd be? Now turn me loose!
So you can try and kill us again?
I wasn't trying to kill you. I was trying to scare you away.
Like the three men you killed?
I only killed two.
There were three. Elmer Gleason, Lonnie Post, and Sam Hodges.
Is that what their names was? You never told me.
Why'd you kill them?
I killed them because they tried to kill me. They wanted me to show them where the gold was, and when I wouldn't do it, they pointed a gun at me and said they was going to shoot me. And well, I got away from them, and when they come after me, I killed them. Then I dragged the bodies outside as a warning to anyone else who might come around.
And what about Elmer Gleason? He tried to kill you too?
What are you doing here? You got no right in here. This is my home.
Sure, and you aren't for saying you live here in this mine, are you?
Yes, I'm a saying that. Now, I want you to turn me loose and get out of here.
How do you live? What do you eat? What do you drink?
Bugs, rabbits when I can catch them, such wild plants as can be at, and there's a pool of water back a ways.
What's your name?
You already know my name. You said it.
What you mean we've already said it?
I'm the fella I didn't kill.
Mister, you've been in this mine too long. You aren't making any sense at all. What do you mean you're the man you didn't kill?
Wait a minute. I think I know what he means. Are you trying to tell us that you're Elmer Gleason?
I ain't trying to tell you nothing, Sonny. I'm doing it. I'm Elmer Gleason.
I think it would be ill-advised for us to arrive at the bank simultaneously.
What? He means don't all of us show up at the same time, Moran.
Why not?
Because if all of us ride up to the bank together, then dismount and enter the bank simultaneously, it cannot help but arouse suspicions.
I think he's right.
All right. So how are we going to do it?
We won't ride up to the bank at all. Shaw, Pogue, McKenna, and Johnny Hill will be with me. We'll come up central from the south, then dismount about four buildings away and walk to the bank. Pettigrew, you, Moran, Carterhill, and Garcia will come down central from the north, and you'll also stop about four buildings away from the bank. Pettigrew, you and I will go into the bank first, but since we will be approaching from different directions, it will not appear that we're together. I'll go to the table and start filling out a slip as if I'm about to make a deposit. Pogue, you, Shaw, and McKenna will come together from the south. Moran and Garcia will come down from the north. That will give us 7 men inside the bank at the same time. Certainly enough to take care of business. Johnny Hill will hold the horses from the south group. Carter will hold the horses from the north group. When you two see the last one of us enter the bank, both of you come riding toward the bank and stop out front, holding the horses. After we get the money, we'll make our exit from the bank as rapidly as possible, mount our horses and ride away.
That sounds like a real good plan.
I'd add something to it.
What would you add to it, Shaw?
I think as we ride out of town, we ought to be shooting.
Certainly. If we're shot at, we should return fire.
Nah, I ain't talking about just returning fire. I mean, we should just start shooting at anybody and everybody.
Why would you suggest such a thing?
You want to get away, don't you?
Aye, of course.
Then Shaw is right. If we start shooting up the town on the way out, there ain't nobody going to think about shooting us. Only thing they're going to be thinking about is getting killed. Near about everyone is just going to try to find them a place to get out of the line of fire.
All right. This is your country. I shall defer to your traditions.
McAllister, Book 1, The Eagle's Legacy, is continued on the next CD.